Welcome back to another of the Geek Whispers. This is Matt Brender.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troy.
And we have found a new enemy in our ranks. Well, you may have known, past listeners, that PR, public relations, has always been a point of contention, standing out there and throwing their tweets from the rooftops as if people want to have those land on their heads. But we had a great conversation and realized, you know, they're kind of our father in the Star Warsian way. So we're looking at our next enemy in the sights, and it is demand generation. They are seemingly the clone army of social media Jedi, and we really want to know, demand generation, are you the enemy or not? So,
way
Amy
to stretch
Lewis,
a metaphor, man.
Yeah. So, Amy, get right into it. What's your angle on it?
Well, if I have to hear or use the word paywall one more time in a week span, I'm totally frustrated in people's thinking that demand generation is the only way that social media can be profitable, useful, valuable. So maybe I'm a purist. Maybe I have the Jedi, you know, gleam in my eye or something. But the idea that all of our assets and all of this has to be have a paywall in front or after it, I think is disingenuous to what we're trying to accomplish with this new kind of word of mouth influencer marketing, as we've talked about it. And I think that demand generation, when you mix those streams so constantly, you're really, I don't know, it cheapens the interaction. That's not the long-term relationship. That's a short-term. It's short-term, transactional, and it doesn't serve the larger purpose. And okay. Yeah,
you're really hitting it on the head. Can you map out those streams for us? Like, what streams are you seeing intermingled here? Are you saying social media and demand generation? When we muddle the two together, they get messy?
Exactly. I don't think they're natural relatives. And I think the idea is that a lot of traditional marketing seems to think if you add demand gen, just slap it on top of social media, then you'll make social media valuable. So they don't see intrinsic value in social media. And with the idea that maybe you could use those tools to build relationships that would have a correlative effect long-term in terms of sales, just like a long-term sales relationship, or that's informational, or, you know, that there's no general good in pure social media. That it has to have demand gen. You have to get a lead, whatever that definition is, you have to get a lead out of it. And I don't think that's true.
But wait a minute. At some, I'll be playing the Emperor in this play. at some point, Amy and Matt, you know, we got to pay our salaries here. We are employees of a business. One of the jobs of marketing is to generate leads. When I go to a VMUG, one of the most community-oriented, you know, activities out there, I see people who have paid, I don't know, $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, I don't actually know the number of dollars to have a table and to talk to actual potential customers and take their information and turn them into a lead. So I think these things are synergistic, aren't they? The part of what we do is generate leads, not just community or
Well, but that's
yeah, and I really want to push back. Well, Amy, before you jump into it, I gotta say, what does it even mean to be pure social media? I mean, that's a bit disingenuous, right there. That there's this pure social media idea, as we've hit on the head many times here. Social media reports to somebody, and it's generally marketing in our worlds, and it generally means okay, demand generation. It may not be your father, but it's definitely the one holding the laser gun. I forgot what they call that in Star Wars. I'm embarrassed. I just lost my nerd card.
Soon you'll be bantha bait. But sure. Maybe we can call it community. How about that? My lineage, my house, the house of that I live in, came from a long line of people going back 10 years who were from the community side. So we had it was kind of a tech support community. And that's where the VMware community grew out of. So that is pretty much pure play customer success story. Not, you know, it's concerned with customer success, not concerned with generating. And I believe that it's applicable over the entire marketing and sales funnel, and that customers who are in looking for solutions check out our forums and check out our satisfied customers, and that at certain times in the in that sales cycle, they look at that and they're you know, that reassures them. But that's an indirect effect, right? The direct effect is not about lead generation at all. So, I mean, Amy, can we call this? Can we call your one pole of this axis social media spectrum community generation?
I think that's a great way of looking at it, and you hit the nail right on the head there with the direct versus indirect. And I think that some of the challenge between and the tension you feel between social media and demand gen is demand gen's insistence to get the information as soon as possible, even if they already know you. You know, it is a clone army. They don't care. They just shoot. It doesn't matter how often they hit. It's about mass and scale. It's not about involvement and engagement. And I think with your analogy in terms of thinking about community, it is the assumption that building community can eventually build demand, that you don't have to have the answer immediately, and that it's worth engaging the person. It's worth taking the chance. It's worth developing the relationship with the idea that that's a long-term process, and that perhaps you will get into a cycle where information is shared. But at that point, you almost bypass the demand gen cycle, to be honest, because you're further down the decision-making path. You're deeper in an engagement. You're perhaps with a salesperson that you've been hand introduced to, or because you did go to an event, which, you know, in that example is sort of outside the realm of social media, if you will. It's, you know, an in real life event. You kind of know the exchange versus you watch a video, and to watch a 7-minute video, you know, you're supposed to put a paywall in front of it. So you can't see this video unless, you know, you hand over some piece of information. And I promise you it's going to be more than your Twitter, because please tell me nobody's found out a way to spam via Twitter.
Not yet.
I've seen it. It's not terribly successful when you see people try to take over a hashtag during a conversation or an event. But yeah, and like the clone army, I think when they shoot, they often miss. They don't hit anything. It's just if you're going to measure success by the number of bullets shot, then demand generation always wins over social media. But there has to be some sort of, like, have you actually hit the target? And that's why I think the metaphor really holds, that the Jedi of social media in this community, non-existent organization that we should all report to, is really the one that's getting something in return in the long run.
Because it's the difference between cold calling and word of mouth, right? And yes, I have an incredible bias. It feels like so much cold calling when somebody looks at an asset and you've got to have a paywall, and then you follow up. How do you know where that person is in the cycle if you already have them in the database? How sophisticated does your system have to be to truly engage that person? There's still sort of a number, you know, a distant line and a large set of data. It's very different than having this up close lightsaber to lightsaber kind of battle or conversation that is the world in which I play. Whenever those two worlds clash, I think you do get a bit of an epic battle, because they're coming from that world of scale and from that world of immediacy. I'm saying you've got to trust me, but this is a marketing plan that we're going to put in place over a year's time, and we're going to measure it differently so that you can see the impact. But we have to change even how we measure it. You can't say it's the number of bullets shot, because I'm not going to be shooting any bullets.
Yeah, but Amy, when it comes to measurement, I don't think it has to be immediate. The immediacy, I think it's almost comes out of just by behavior, by what we're used to practicing. I feel like sales, first and foremost, has to worry about immediacy. Marketing gets a little longer scope of things. What I bet would lead us down this sense of, like, needing to put a paywall in front of it and then kind of tally the number of peanuts that we got to go through the paywall or badges scanned at an event is simply because, how else do you measure it? How do you know you were successful?
Well, less how else do you measure it? Because measurement for itself, its own sake, isn't any good, right? How else do you – the reason I get 20 emails in my inbox every morning from – either people who have bought my name, for the most part, because I've never talked to them, is that it works, right? Now, there are some secular trends in that, you know, there are some global trends that are happening in the world, right? That people are tuning out marketing messages and it's working less and less well every day. We've trained everybody to ignore banner ads. We're training everybody to ignore things in your inbox. I mean, in my corporate inbox right now, I have 26,905 messages because I don't delete anything. Oh, no, I have 26,905 unread messages. Almost all of them are spam. I have 91,000 messages altogether. Most of those 26,000 messages are spam I've never opened. So our open rates, if you go talk to your email marketing folks, your open rates are down. But the fact is it still works, right? You send out, you know, email is virtually free. You send out enough. The reason you scan a badge of an innocent conference goer at a conference is that, you know, you scan enough badges, you send out enough phishing emails, eventually they click through and they look at one of your assets, one of your white papers, and then you can start them along, if you're sophisticated enough, start them along a very sophisticated marketing path where often you're sending them industry information and information about the general area, and then when they show interest in that, then you start sending them more specific information on your product. And these things are very sophisticated. I'm not good at it, and I'm not interested in it, but you know, there's a whole science behind it. So at some level, I hate the concept of a lead. I hate email marketing. I think it's got to be reinvented. I feel really degraded when it's done to me. But on the other hand, it works. So who are we to say, don't come over into our – we've got an ecosystem that we've built. It's a lovely coral reef. There's different kinds of fish and coral and you know – sea urchins and living, you know, it's all living. You know, who are we to say that somebody can't fish on our coral reef?
Me. So if demand generation is working and social media communities is working, then why would this be a conversation of us being enemies?
Well, it's not working. The island that they live on is shrinking because of global warming and the rise in the level of the oceans. And they're on their boats and they're headed for our coral reef.
They're completely headed. And just to jump in here, I think that it doesn't work. It's not comfortable. The things you never are asked to measure are how many people did you alienate because of this completely irritating tactic. Or, you know, nobody ever does countermeasure measuring. I think there's room for multiple tactics in any one world. I think some of my resentment and my pushback is the don't tell me that social media has no value unless there's demand gen application. It has to be to say that social media is only going to be paid for, is only functional if it's demand gen, and if that's the measuring stick by what is successful or not, I think that's short-sighted. Because when you look at the statistics, if we want to bring numbers in, word of mouth is it's like second or third in terms of reasons people buy things. And that's not coming from this kind of demand gen, paywall, aggressive behavior. So does that even disrupt the cycle and push some cycles further? That's my question. We don't have clear understanding on the kind of damage that gets done. And is the damage to the coral reef irreparable?
Well, I say ourselves. I mean, I've been sitting here kind of being the devil's advocate, literally the devil, because demand gen people and the clone army are evil. But you know, at some level, we've got to coexist. I kind of see us as the Nature Conservancy. I kind of see social media, at least at VMware and my group, as the person that allows fishing in the coral reef, but controls it, because you ruin it. You're right. You ruin it. If I have a Twitter handle and it's tweeting out information, look, it's tweeting out information that's useful to people. I love this article. I tweeted it out today. It's from 2011. It's from Kathy Sierra. I don't know if you guys are familiar with her, called Pixie Dusk and the Mountain of Mediocrity. But the killer quote at the end is, just make people better at something they want to be better at. Like, you can do all this social media stuff. You can do all this, you know, hashtags and da-da-da, and you can be their friends, and you can, like, you can do all this sort of social stuff, and you can – but that's useful. But what you really want to do is make people better at something they want to be better at. Like, and that's the core of our advocacy programs, the V-Experts, the Cisco Champions, the EMC Elect. It's at the core of all the blogging that we do and things like that. So I'm going to get back to my point here. So we are doing something. We are making people better, right? We are helping people. That's what we're trying to do. And going back to our metaphor of this coral reef, I have no idea what point I was trying
well,
to make.
I can.
I'm going to go Star Wars, though, okay. Which is that to me is the Jedi Temple. So when you make people better at what they were, you're training. It's a long-term investment. And the idea is that you arm them with information and you amplify and you trust them. And the clone army approach is, again, it's a spray and pray kind of a mentality. And I think, you know, something we've all talked about here before is part of where the tension exists is when you put one above the other or when you try to do an overlay and force a mashup that is extremely uncomfortable. So I think that when you take some of those tactics, the demand gen tactics, and just bolt them on to social, you are destined for failure.
But okay, so let's say someone who has subscribed to Cisco's main channel is interested in Cisco's products and Cisco the entity. You are giving them links to stuff. Some of them are blog posts. Some of them are funny pictures. I don't know. And some of them are white papers that they might be interested in that you got, you know, from Gartner or Forrester or whoever. What is there? Why, so that it's if it's of value to them, if it's not of value, like if you pollute the stream too much, if you turn it too much, if it's really just too annoying, people will just go away. So as long as people are there, is there anything wrong with that? You've obviously people you have an objective measure that people will because it's social media, right? You can always unfollow.
No, agreed. And I think you can put that information out there for people to choose or not choose. And again, I think it's why I started in email marketing. My career started back there. And so I've done a lot of it. And I think I like Twitter as a platform because it is unspammable. I like the idea that there is meritocracy. And you're right. And some of that could include assets, links to assets that are behind a paywall. But the idea is you will be punished by people not listening if you don't provide the proper mix and good information. If every tweet is a link to a paywall item, it's not going to be successful. It is a mix. So yes, we've set up this strict dichotomy, so that's one example. But that's very much a social led strategy that engages demand gen. That's not a bolt on call blitz. It's not put a paywall in front of every asset to not permit anything, to not have a lead acquisition strategy attached to it.
But that said, there could be a lot of value added to the ecosystem by playing nicely. And I know no one's disagreeing with that on merit, but I think we'll start disagreeing if we get into the details. Because I'm a firm believer in measuring for success, but not with the sort of peanut counting that I really enjoy the term vanity metrics for things like that, like number of tweets we had today, number of people that looked at this webpage. Like those aren't valuable in and of themselves, but if you start finding actionable metrics that lead to actions that ultimately will lead to demand generation because we're after some revenue, or I don't even care about demand gen, but the revenue itself, I'm at a startup now. I know we want money. So if we're getting to that point where we can connect the dots between social, between email marketing, between demand generation, I see nothing fundamentally bad about that at all.
But we're talking about reinventing this concept of demand gen to fit the rules of social.
Right. Imagine so I'll switch hats here for a second. So Matt, imagine you're back at the Evil Machine Corporation and a new VP comes in and they're like, this social stuff is BS. You know, the community should just be for support. Let's ignore that. Everybody who's on social media marketing, now your MBOs are going to be lead gen. That's it. And you're only a lead gen organization. And your job is to be as upworthy and buzzfeedy as possible to get leads. You know, that would ruin it, right? That would be like crapping in the coral reef, taking a big dump.
Well, how are we measuring demand generation, John, in that situation? I need to zoom
leads
in on that.
In the database, people who have filled out the form, and I can now spam. That's a lead. That's when I talk to my demand gen people, that's what they get measured on. How many leads, how many qualified leads, actually. They got to go through some scoring process.
I mean, if we're using smarter tools that are out there, if we're learning about who engages with our content and retweets it and that automatically pulls in their Twitter handles into a lead gen situation, and you start measuring those as leads as part of regular activity with key influencers in a company ecosystem, I think it's a brilliant use of social media and demand generation at the same time.
Are you guys smarter than us? Because we don't do that.
Well, and the other thing I'm going to push back on here, remember some of the great value in influencers is that they aren't necessarily the people who are going to sign the checks. They aren't necessarily a lead. We may know about them already, so they're not going to show up. The demand gen person is not going to get credit for someone who we already know and have fully identified and has may or may not have moved down the funnel.
Or who moves others down the funnel because they write so brilliantly about your product every day.
Therefore, in that kind of model, the problem is an influencer model is about more new as opposed to value of. So some of the influencers that one has, again, imagine this world, this new world order where you've been told like every activity shuts down if you can't prove more qualified leads, you would have to drop spending time with influencers, even though they might be a route to more leads. One, because it's speculative and somewhat correlative, and two, because you might not be able to measure or trace it properly. So that big space in the middle that all of us believe in, this concept of there is value in people who spread word of mouth and have influence, even if they're not purchasers, and even though we have relationships with them and know them, disappears because you can't measure it appropriately for that demand gen way of thinking.
Yeah, I think it can be done. I mean, I think we can coexist, and we got to get a guest on to discuss this, maybe a non-evil demand gen marketer. I think it can coexist, and we're trying to figure out ways it can coexist. I mean, I've looked at our success rates. You know, we do pretty well in at this point to do converged media, to converge social media. What Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn have done is they lured us all onto their platforms with the promise of being friends and having, you know, forming these happy Ewok villages of communities. And then what they did is then they're like, psych.
They served us for dinner.
My gang, I didn't go, but my gang just went to Dreamforce these last couple of weeks. And they came back with, you know, all sorts of – that's really focused on – the marketing side of Dreamforce is all really focused on demand gen, what we would call demand gen. And it's a lot of stuff around – at this point, you cannot have a very big social footprint without inclusion of paid. And the kind of the best practices that we're seeing now are if you're really on the ball, you launch stuff in to your social streams. You know, some people see it on Twitter. Some people see it on Facebook, you know, however many people Facebook allows to see it and however many people happen to be logged in at that time on Twitter. You see what does well. You look at real-time stats. You see which things start to take off. And then you double down on them by putting marketing budget in front of them. And then those platforms will show those things that were popular to more and more people. And that's the way you get the viral stuff rolling. So there's a whole methodology around this. But it's an integrated marketing strategy with you know, that includes paid. And that's really the way that has to happen these days.
Yeah, I think what we're all hitting on and not saying directly is that we're scared of polluting the rainforest. I'm losing our metaphor. Polluting
coral
our
reef. Coral reef.
Yeah, please. We're worried about polluting the coral reef because at some point it takes many years to grow coral, and it takes half a second to destroy it. And it takes many months of social engagement to earn any respect in the influencer groups that we partake in. And it takes just a couple stupid tweets and poorly followed up comments to lose all of that.
Now I'm going to switch hats for a second again. The whole thing is screwed up, right? The whole concept of a lead is screwed up. I mean, I know it works, and so maybe we have to bathe.
Well, maybe
in that
it doesn't
blood.
Work. Maybe.
But why don't we turn it around? Are you guys familiar with Clue Train, right? the Clutrain Manifesto. One of the authors of that is Doc Searles. And his thing that he's been working on for the last 10 years, and I think I probably talked about this in one of our first podcasts, is vendor relationship management. Instead of doing customer relationship management, people should be doing vendor relationship management, because now people have the power. And wouldn't it be powerful, instead of a company getting your information and pinging you every week, you ready to buy yet? You ready to buy yet? You ready to buy yet? What if you had their information, and when you were finally ready to, like, oh, I'm interested in new storage, hey, Mr. Vendor, come talk to me. And it does happen at a high level on the enterprise side. But, you know, what if there were systematic ways on the consumer side and on the enterprise for you to do intent casting, to say, I now have an intent, I am ready to go to a purchase, which is why all the money got made with Google, is why, retargeting makes my Amazon, the last thing I looked at Amazon follows me all around the web. So once you signal an intent, then the conversation becomes interesting. Until then, this email marketing and this social marketing, you know, you ready yet? You ready yet? You ready yet? Really just is like a little tiny kid poking you in the stomach, you know, over and over again.
It's true.
It's a nice idea, but you're missing the point on the fact that people don't always know what they're looking for. And like that constant awareness, that top of mind awareness, like I'm not hungry when I see a billboard necessarily, but all of a sudden when I'm getting hungry, I start wanting a Big Mac. And even though I wouldn't order one normally, but I've just been inundated by billboards and advertisement for them. So I think there's still that idea that if you want you and very psychologically based studied ideas that you want to be deep in someone's psyche before they're looking for the intent, as opposed to when they get to the point of intent.
We talk about the classic marketing funnel. I mean, awareness is important for that reason. In some ways, we've come back full circle of a world where we want to turn everything immediately into a lead. There is great benefit for the awareness so that someone is primed and it's not just, here's a taco before you're hungry, give me your money. That is, to a great extent, I think these ongoing conversations, these long terms, these conversations without boundaries and without limitations, without asking for quite a long time, and again, being prepared to do that, always having available the ability to change the conversation into something else, that can render results. It is a new model. It's a new way of thinking. It's a more complicated way of thinking. But I think it will, in the end, bear better results, because the more ways we have to put in a marketing touch, the more ways that people will find to ignore.
Yeah. I'm talking to Chris on Twitter right now as we're talking. He's also pointing out that the stakes are raised with social, in that, everybody has a soapbox now. And if you do it wrong, whether you do social media outreach wrong or you do demand gen wrong, you're much more likely to be called out. If you do it, you know, poorly or awkwardly or stupidly, or you insult people or insult their intelligence, many more people are more likely to call you out. So in fact, the stakes are higher, right? As you do this, so you've got to be double. If you do demand gen on social, you've got to be good at it.
But then you can ignore it potentially.
I'm just saying, to the company, the risks are higher, because if you do it poorly. You know, if you get junk mail at home, you just throw it away. But if you get some obnoxious at mention from a company you've never heard of before, inviting you to sign up for this thing, and then they spam you every day, you're going to call them out. So, you know, the execution risks are higher.
I'm just questioning that. I mean, I'm trying to stick to the frameworks we've built. I agree, like, personally, if somebody's doing that, and we've all had that done to us, it's frustrating, it's annoying. And then I'm thinking, like, well, in the system we've built with the measurement in place, does it look like they're actually succeeding? And is that part of the problem, that somehow success isn't measured on the temperament of the person you're targeting, but rather just the quantity of times you've talked to them?
Well, let's go back to our metaphor. To your point, a Jedi, when you injure a Jedi, it's more personal. When you knock out a clone, they don't care. So it's back to, you can understand why this concept of the bloodless demand gen is so popular, because there's skin in the game, and you can be damaging, and you want to be reasonable. Let's say all this is reasonable, right? Not some extreme corner case. Then the what we do is still way more sleeves up, sweat equity than a demand gen campaign. It just is. And so I think when you feel, that's why we continue to feel the tension and we don't necessarily have it down yet. So both sides come at it very differently. And we don't want the clone army coming in and trying to train Jedi.
And just to be fair, the clone army would probably be pretty pissed if they tried to sit down while we taught them the Force.
Can you imagine? That's pretty funny to even think about.
We can teach them. We can teach them. We don't have to shoot them all. We can coexist.
It's true.
But you're right. I just think their instincts are wrong. And so, you know, the stuff that they initially try is never quite right. And that's everything from the strategic, like we've been talking about, to the tactical, right? I've seen demand gen sites built where the only – it's multiple pages. They all have the same title. If you come into them from the side directly to a URL – some of them don't – you know, they used to be built in Flash, so thank God that's gone. You know, but individual URL the pages have URLs, but if you come to a URL, it might not even give you the whole story because they expect you to come in the front because that's what the email they sent out had only the one URL. So they're not set up for social. The assets are not easily shareable. So there's a lot of tactical instincts that have wrong. All the assets are on one page. How am I supposed to share a white paper if it's mixed in with 10 other assets? I can't even tweet about it. So that's A, that's wrong. And then B, sometimes their instincts just kick in and it's comforting, right? They'll do we have a product launch and they were like, oh, well, we should put up a demand gen thing in front of the product launch. But we don't want to put in a giant form, right? A giant qualification form for people to watch our video of the product launch because we'd like, 20,000 people to watch it. But let's ask for people's emails. So you go ahead and do that. And then you have 20,000 emails. What are you going to do with them? 20,000 emails, half of them are Gmails. You don't know what company people work for. You don't know, they're not qualified leads at all. By this company's own scoring rules, you can't put them into a database. You can't email them because they haven't been qualified. They're just random email addresses. So you've just, because you have instinctually put a wall in front of something and captured emails, that no one's going to do with them. You fished all these fish and now you're just going to let them rot on the dock.
Hmm.
That happens.
With the metaphor of leaving the fish to rot, I think that is the challenge that when you're, and in some ways, it gets back to our original point. When you're gold or scored against the value, the quantity, then you lose sight of the quality and the actual strategy. And not that social is perfect by any stretch of the imagination, because it can't be so Pollyanna-ish that let's all be friends and let unicorns fly about. There has to be some value there. There has to be some value exchange. There has to be some forward motion for any of these programs to continue. But when they come at it from such different angles, you really do end up with rotting fish because you and unfortunately, if we take this all the way to a corporate structure, the larger the corporation, the more likely that is to happen without oversight. Whereas a smaller corporation, the strategy has to be somewhat different because you're running leaner. But in a place where you're scored only for the number of clicks or the number, again, you measure the wrong things, you get the wrong behavior.
Our big companies, it is factory fishing. There's just so many rotting fish everywhere.
It's the Henry Ford model of marketing I keep talking about.
You're only measured by your MBOs, and your MBOs are leads in the database.
And they're parts that have gone down the conductor belt, not whether they can be put together down the line. That's right. Not your problem.
Have you seen an event report? The event reports I've seen all list very prominently, this event was a success because we got X number of badge scans.
Absolutely. Yep. When sales gets mad at marketing, that's where, and of course there's a pushback on both sides. Sales wants it. They want to show up and have somebody write a check. And, marketing wants to continue to get dollars. And the way you do that is to have the fish not rot before you get your check.
Yeah.
I'm really thinking about this now. I mean, it's going to have me thinking for a while because I don't disagree. And you guys had some good examples, some really good examples about ways that things can work humanely together. And it's not that I don't ever want to be measured. I like to do things that we haven't figured out how to measure yet.
That said, I think it's if you haven't tried to measure it just because no one's measured it before, you're being lazy.
Well, I agree. Well, it's the penicillin example. You couldn't measure penicillin before it was invented, but you could measure the impact afterward. So sometimes you have to do it and then figure out the tool you need to measure it. But yeah. The concept that's outlined is you have to make a plan that's very neat, and you have to measure this in degrees or feet or centigrade. But sometimes you don't know what measure you're going to use until you've done it.
I think the other thing that we didn't do in this podcast is we said no. But we did not set up what's the positive model that we were building. You know, and I've talked about it in previous ones. And the model in my head is we have these activities and assets that take place with inside of a community. All those things happen online so that they're visible by other people. And, you know, some of those things are discussions, some of those things are forums, some of those things are blog posts from us and from our community, and then some of those things are white papers or whatever that get pushed out there and people commenting about them. And depending on what the asset is it a thought leadership piece? Is it a piece about the industry? Is it a piece about your specific solution? Is it a technical guide or an evaluator's guide or whatever? You know, those things impact different parts of this customer journey or marketing funnel. And people pick them up, they opt in and pick them up at will. We don't push them at them. So that's what I see. I see by operating in public with a group of interested individuals, I leave cookie trails all up and down the marketing funnel. And that's what I try to be doing. And that, you know, that's the positive model of how we're adding value. And I'm sure there's some things there we could measure.
What I agree.
You know, it but it is different than saying, well, I could put demand gen gates at each one of those on each one of those things.
I use the cookie crumb model a lot because people do understand that with the concept that I'm sort of lowballing, sandbagging, if you will, of these assets are so they aren't the high value assets, so we can leave them sprinkled around. But the other element is that you generate excitement. People, human nature is to go where the party is. And so when people see people being excited about certain assets, you draw more attention. That in turn can pull more people, more qualified people, as you say, to the assets that you want to put a paywall in front of or near because they are a Gartner white paper. You've made an investment and this is what you want to get out of it. That's fine. But you have to create some energy and excitement because otherwise there's a large wide open space with a lot of information and no way for someone to judge which asset to run toward, which solution to run toward, et cetera. So there are positive ways, I think, and they can have a relationship. It's just that neither side, I think, can come at the other with a traditional way of thinking. We have to flex in our thinking to be able to coexist.
Yeah. There is a somebody came to drew for me on the whiteboard a Forrester customer journey diagram. And I'm trying to find it online. I may need to go and get my login and see if I could find it. See if it is as it was delivered to me. But it was an interesting diagram of the customer journey showing that, sure, the CIOs were interested at the very beginning and kind of right in the middle. But, in between that, there were a couple of humps where the technical people came in. And you've got to have those technical people. And that's where they get to narrow down the vendors or, choose a final vendor. And the technical people come in there and they have to be armed with knowledge. And so it's not as simple as, the CIO. You only have to, you hear over and over again at our kind of companies, oh, we got to go higher. We got to talk to more CIOs. And that's true. But boy, the CIO does not make that decision and go on that journey in isolation. So a lot of what we do are arming the technical influencers.
Yeah, and there's such a possible opportunity to mislead yourself in that situation because we make this – I hate the term, but we make this snackable content. It makes enough sense that it's actually a helpful term. But we make the snackable content for the very busy C-level person. But then we don't switch it up before the technical person gets involved, and we don't continue that journey from that consumer's point of view where it does go from high-level thinker to, hey, validate this technical people, and they have to be armed with true technical content and being reached out to by a given vendor. And then it probably pops back up a level or two for the final decision-making. But that cycle is pretty complex in the naive funnel that we have right now, especially as it's reinvented through social. So I think we just keep breaking it and we haven't figured out how to fix it yet.
Well, and one last piece, I'm thinking about company size. So a couple, if you have a smaller company or a mid-sized company, it's also possible that this, you just cut out that DG layer in between. Either you go full out DG because people understand what you're doing and that's how you sell and what you're selling, or you bypass it. And the way I think you could do that in a larger company, sort of second point, is what about when the salespeople are using social to scale and social sales and that concept? Because we're talking purely about marketing and its engagement with social media. But I'm living in a world where I've got more and more social salespeople coming on board to do various things. And that becomes a whole different model. It really breaks that traditional journey, and it breaks that concept of potential, you know, leads, because they're out finding their own leads. They're engaging with their own leads. They're informing. It kind of turns it on its head, but it's not scalable. So it's hard to pitch and really explain at the enterprise level.
Yeah, they work so well at the smaller level. And I really hope that we pull a guest that has that hands-on experience in a lighter weight organization that's ready for the dynamic change to the tunnel that is happening right now. The funnel. I don't know what tunnel's involved. Maybe that's the one that we kill all the stormtroopers in. I think we're at a point where we do what we usually do when we call people out. We invite them on next. So if you are
bring your smelly fish.
Yeah. And your laser guns and your helmet so that you miss us when you shoot. So whatever metaphor you want to bring to the table, if you're in demand generation and agree or disagree with us, we'd really love to have you and keep exploring where social media and demand generation will coexist and where we'll continue to squabble. So with that, you've listened to another wonderful Geek Whispers.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.